What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Friar Faithful Chronicle podcast. I'm your host, Deegs. Today is going to be a solo podcast. Pretty much every single episode that I've done on the show since the very first one has been with somebody else. You know, Trevor Hoot's been on here. Ralph Lifshitz of Prospects Live has been on here. And I do have some more guests lined up to come on the pod. But, you know, today I thought that I would kind of take a break from talking about the Padres specifically and kind of hit on a kind of a more broad baseball topic. So on today's show, we're going to talk about, you know, some little scouting things that I like to do when I'm writing up scouting reports on whether it be Padres prospects, prep prospects, or just, you know, prospects on other teams' farm systems. Kind of what I look for, some identifiers, some key things to do when scouting. Few housekeeping things first. Make sure you check out the new site, FriarFaithfulChronicle.com. We're pumping out daily content every single day about the Padres. So if you like, you know, just basic Padres pieces, we have a lot of running scouting reports on all different kinds of prospects within the organization. We're going to have, you know, minor league affiliate stuff coming out once the season gets closer. Daily farm reports, daily game recaps from the Padres, just all your basic stuff, your one-stop shop for all things Padres, essentially. So go ahead and check us out there. Follow us on Twitter at the FF Chronicle. It's capital T-H-E, then capital F-F-C, and then just, you know, Chronicle or whatever after that. So another thing that I really want to preface before I jump into this is I'm not a scouting expert by any means. I do have some background in it. I worked with Prep Baseball Report this past summer and still do some independent stuff with them. I'm doing a lot of collaboration and contribution to Prospects Live, which is, you know, a fairly large scouting website, prospects website, fantasy baseball publication as well. So, I kind of like to think I know what I'm talking about when it comes to this stuff. I've talked to a lot of people that are, you know, in the industry or used to be in the industry or know people in the industry that have a lot of background and experience with this kind of stuff. So you don't have to listen to me. I mean, that's fine if you choose not to, but I just want to, you know, kind of go on a limb and say that I trust my evaluations on prospects, and when I see something, I trust myself enough to, you know, publicly tweet it or you know, make a podcast about it. So, with that being said, let's kind of jump into this real quick. So just some things I'm going to cover on this pod. If you haven't noticed by now, the episode is called Scouting the Padres. This is kind of a running series I want to do on the podcast. It's not going to be all scouting related stuff, but I'm going to bring guests on here, you know, guys who have worked with scouts, worked close to the organization, maybe themselves have gone out and, you know, scouted a large handful of games at the minor league or prep levels. And I'm going to bring them on to kind of talk about what they do. But, you know, today's show, we're going to cover just kind of your basic 101 stuff of what to look for in a prospect. We'll hit on hitters, pitchers, and some very basic stuff you can do when looking at stuff. So why is this something you should care about? Well, in my opinion, to be an informed, not to be an informed, but part of being an informed baseball fan of an organization definitely has to do with knowing the organization fairly well outside of the major league level. So especially if a team at the big league level has struggled so much like the Padres have, kind of getting into the teeth of the prospects and knowing the future of your organization is something that to me is very valuable. And especially with as loaded of a farm system as the Padres have, there's guys that some of you have probably never heard of that have potential to be impact big league players. So I think it's definitely important to know the organization from top to bottom, just so you have a, you know, kind of a feel for what's going on. I also think it's important to just be able to have your own opinions on stuff. A lot of people go off of the grades they see on, you know, MLB Pipeline or Baseball America or FanGraphs or basically what other people tell you. And I'm kind of a firm believer that this applies to everything in life, that if you can, you know, base your own opinions on your own thoughts and what you see on something, whether it be baseball, work-related, or pretty much anything else, and be able to formulate your own thoughts on a topic, that's something that's very valuable, you know, just in your everyday life. So take this and apply it however you want to, but Let's kind of start out by talking about what are some things to look for. So let's say that, you're a guy who's interested in potentially diving into the, who the Padres are going to take at the eighth pick. Well, I think it's important to when scouting, for team dependent, for when it comes to MLB draft and you're scouting for where a player is going to be selected or what team could take this kind of player, you kind of have to know the background of the team and the position that they're in right now. So the Padres, they are on, as most of us know, they're a team on the rise. They have a fairly young, talented group of prospects that are going to be coming up, whether it be this year, next year, or have already made their big league debuts. And they're inching toward playoff contention. So what that tells me is at the number eight pick in the draft this year, I think they're going to take a college player. In the past couple of years, they've taken prep guys. The last 3 years, they've taken prep guys with their first round pick. You have obviously Mackenzie Gore in 2017, Ryan Weathers in 2018, and CJ Abrams last year. Gore and Abrams were kind of like those two were the best players available in their eyes. But with Weathers, very easily could have been a college guy. There were more talented players taken after him, in my opinion. So that's kind of a pick I think the Padres missed on. But in this year's draft, I think they're definitely going to take a college player, whether it be an arm or a bat. Now, I do want to preface that drafting for team need in baseball is something that should never be done. So if you're going to mock a, let's say, a center fielder to the Padres because you believe that their current top need is center field, teams don't work like that. They take best player available, and if it's because of all the uncertainties that there is in baseball, you don't know what's going to happen. So, if that guy, happens, if it's between a guy who they view on their draft board as very similar, and one guy fits a need and one guy doesn't, maybe they'll inch towards taking that guy. But normally, it's just who's the best guy on our board, and that's who we're going to roll with. But for the Padres, I feel like they're kind of in a special circumstance given the fact that they're not going to be drafting for need. They're going to be drafting for readiness. And obviously, unless it's a super talented high school bat, and even those guys, they take a little bit longer to progress through the draft or through the minor leagues and get to the big leagues. So, for a team that's kind of desperate, in my opinion, to win, I think the Padres will probably go a college arm. In this, with their eighth selection, I think that Asalesi of Texas A&M is probably the pick as of right now. Potentially Nick Gonzalez of New Mexico State if he drops that far, but I think that's a guy who's been getting some first round buzz or some first overall pick buzz, so potentially not. But then if they were to go the prep route, so let's say the Padres want to go the prep route in this upcoming draft, who are some possible guys they're looking at? Well, typically, and this applies to, college guys as well, but when you look at prep guys, prep players are so difficult to kind of project because there's so many things that can go wrong in their development that can hinder them from ever being that top prospect you want them to be. But in terms of a prep guy, what I look for, let's say a prep bat. So if I'm looking at a prep bat, typically, left-handed bats just have a better track record of progressing through the minors better. You have guys like Jared Kelenic, Gavin Lux, kind of in recent memory. Obviously, those guys are talented players, but left-handed bats that play a premium position will always be more coveted than right-handed bats that play any position. So, left-handed catchers, left-handed shortstops, and left-handed outfielders that can stick in center are, kind of the more coveted guys that you're going to think of. When it comes to like right-handed bats, you're looking at premium guys, guys that play up the middle. So again, catcher, short, or center field. I'll tell you right now, right-handed catchers, unless they're wizards with the glove from the prep level, don't usually get taken fairly high in the draft. Right-handed hitting first base only types are not attractive to scouts at all because they're either going to play first base, and if that doesn't pan out, they're going to be, DH or pinch hitters. Right-handed corner guys, if they don't hit for power or have a strong enough arm to play right field, they're not as attractive either. And then right-handed third basemen have to be power hitters or just they're just not attractive to scouts. So when I'm looking at a prep bat, I'm looking at a left-handed guy that can play a premium position up the middle. and has a fairly projectable swing. Now, what do I mean by projectable swing? Well, hit tool is definitely the hardest aspect of, you know, an offensive player's game to predict. I think that you have to get a really solid look, maybe a week or two worth of looks of one guy to fully, you know, predict his hit tool. And that's something that obviously scouts won't do because they just don't have enough time to do that. But when I look at a prep player's swing, I have to think to myself that whatever their swing looks like now, it's gonna look different and potentially better in 2 years, because if they go to the right organization, they're gonna make minor changes that they see in that swing and elevate it to the next level. Now, prep left-handed bats that already have a solid swing that don't need major adjustments are the guys that work out the best. Now, what do I mean by already have a solid swing? Typically, you want the hands to stay back and you want the hands to stay up. If the hands stay back and they drop, that's going to create more of a loopy, quote unquote, launch angle swing, and you're going to be more tendency to get under the baseball and hit it right up in the air. If the hands stay back and they stay up, then the only natural reaction when you drive the knob in is for the hands to kind of go on the plane that you want it to go. We also want to see short swings. Long swings work at the big league level because guys who have long swings typically hit for a bunch of power and they hit a bunch of home runs. In an 18-year-old kid, I want to see him get short to the baseball and I want to see the barrel stay level through the zone. So a short level swing is absolutely ideal. Scouts don't want to see guys that have a bunch of mechanical, like, If there is a lot of moving parts in a player's swing, those don't tend to translate to the big league level or the professional level, you know, the better than guys who don't, because when they have to go up against spin, they have so much moving parts, it's just hard for them to be on time. Even when they get when they start seeing 94, 95 mile per hour fastballs every single at bat, it's going to be harder for them to be on time if there's so much going on in their load. So short, simple swings that the barrel stays on a level path through the zone, not a ton of movement, not a high leg kick, just a simple, relaxed, you know, approach at the plate. Now, another thing that's really important is bat speed, okay? You can be on time all you want, but it gets to a point where if you're facing 94, 95 every single at-bat, you have to have some twitch and some speed in your hands to be able to catch up to it. Because if you don't, you're just not going to be... It doesn't matter how on time you are if, you know, your bat cannot accelerate through the zone quick enough for you to hit the ball. It just kind of makes sense, right? So I want to see present bat speed. Now, people always ask me, how do you know if someone has bat speed? And you can just tell. This is a thing that was explained to me by the guy who runs Prep Baseball Report, Sean Duncan. He's an absolute brilliant of the game of baseball, brilliant mind. If somebody has bat speed, you'll know. You'll just see it. You'll be like, wow, those are really quick hands. There's not really a tell for it. Typically, if you're really watching a game and you want to know if a guy has present bat speed, I'll tell you this right now. I'll kind of do my best to tie this into the Padres. There's not really a tell for it, but the best tell is going to be if a guy takes anything on the inner half that's hard and he turns on it and, you know, parks it over the fence or parks it into his pull side gap, that's typically bat speed. A perfect example of this is Francisco Mejia. Francisco Mejia has one of the fastest swings I've ever seen in my entire life. And this was, you know, last year I was watching a Padres game and I forget who the opponent was, but he took a 99 mile per hour fastball on the inner third of the plate and destroyed it for a home run. Just turned on it to his pull side. He was batting left-handed, so it went to right field. And I was just so impressed at how quick his bat went through the zone. So just guys like that, guys that can do damage and turn on pitches like that, that really normal hitters can't do, that's what you want to see. Fernando Tatis Jr., when he turned on that fastball off Hunter Green, it was like a 101 mile per hour fastball at the Futures games, and he turned on it and deposited a missile into left field for a base hit. That's bat speed right there. That's being able to get the barrel out in front and actually turn on something that's coming at you at 100 plus miles per hour from 60 feet away, which is incredibly impressive. So bat speed's kind of a thing you'll just see, but typically guys who don't have quick hands and don't have present bat speed don't really translate the best to the big league level. or even the professional level. It's just kind of a thing that happens. Now, another thing that I look at when I'm talking about a prep bat, okay, can they generate power without having to, you know, really without effort? And what I mean by effort is obviously guys swing hard, right? Most power hitters, they swing hard, they have bat speed, and because they have both, they hit the ball very far. But if a guy can generate power without having so much movement in his swing, in his upper half and his lower half, if the power comes from the hands, if you ever see a guy hit a mammoth home run with a simple swing, it's because he's generating power with his bat speed and his hands. And guys that do that, especially 18-year-old kids coming out of high school and entering the professional ranks, those guys are special because they're swinging the bat so quick and have so much quickness and twitch in their hands that they generate power. They create enough energy and momentum to generate power with their hands. And guys that do that, I mean, that is the number one most impressive tool that I see with, you know, with prep guys is the ability to do that. So that's kind of how it is from a hitter standpoint. There's some other things here. For example, if you ever see a prep guy that can, you know, recognize spin out of the hand quickly and can take really good breaking balls, like sliders low and away. Most young hitters struggle slider low and away. No matter if they're left-handed or right-handed, most young guys are going to struggle with soft off-speed pitches away from them. If you see a guy that can lay off that pitch and, you know, kind of maybe he inches towards it, but his hands stay back, he's ready to hit, and he doesn't pull the trigger, those guys are so, I mean, to be able to pick spin up at 18 years old shows that you have a strong recognition of pitch sequencing and pitch recognition. And that is very, very impressive for young guys. So it's kind of just minor things like that. Another thing that I really want to point out, whether, and I'm not saying this, I know I kind of made it sound like, you know, high draft picks, you know, are usually left-handed guys that play premium positions. That's, you know, that's mostly the case because that's more, teams will covet that more. But right-handed guys that play premium positions are, if they're good at what they do, I mean, they're just as valuable, right? Like a guy like Nick Madrigal went number 4 overall in the draft a couple years ago, and he's just a very safe prospect. He's not going to play short, going to stick at second base, but the bat-to-ball skills are there, and it's just a, you know, a guy that I would have taken at that spot too. So I'm not making this sound like exclusively only to left-handed players, but typically prep guys, and I'm talking high school guys only. Madrigal was a college guy, so maybe he wasn't the best example. But prep guys only, typically that go high in the draft, are either left-handed guys that play premium positions or they're fantastic defensive right-handed hitters. And that goes into my next point. Scouts value defense just as much as they value a hit tool, right? If you can play premium defense, that is your ticket to the big leagues. I'll give you a perfect example. Ed Howard. Ed Howard is is the top shortstop in this prep class. He's a Mount Carmel High School guy from Illinois, and he might be the best defensive high school shortstop that has come through Illinois in a very, very, very long time, potentially even the Midwest, okay? And that's a very bold statement to make, but I've actually heard that from a scout before, that Ed Howard is the top prep shortstop that has come through the Midwest with the glove. Now, that guy is a freakishly good athlete, which we'll get into in a second here, and he can hit for some contact, but his ticket to the big leagues is always going to be his glove because the actions are there of a gold glove caliber shortstop. Freddy Galvis, former San Diego Padre, is a guy who has carved out a fairly formidable big league career being a sub-230 hitter and probably hitting 18 to 20 home runs every year just because of how good he is with the glove. A guy like Gabriel Arias, okay, he had a very good season this past year in the California League with Lake Elsinore, but his ticket to the big leagues is always going to be his glove. Why? Because he plays a premium position up the middle and is a very good defender. Manuel Margot last year with the Padres played so many games where he struggled so much with the bat, but he's out there because of his defense. And there is not more, there isn't a better example of this in all of baseball than Austin Hedges, man. He's terrible with the bat. He gives you nothing, but he plays every single day or most of the games because of how good he is defensively. So, scouts, when you look at a guy, you have to value both sides of the ball. You have to value his hit tool and his defense because they're equally important. You're not going to play unless you have good defense at the big league level. I shouldn't say you're not going to play, because if your bat is good enough, you'll get in the lineup, but you're just a detriment to your team if you can't play quality defense. And there is guys that come out of games because, in the sixth or seventh inning and potentially lose an at bat for a defensive replacement because these guys are just, because they just can't hold their own with the glove. And, just teams value defense a ton. So that's something to definitely keep in mind. In terms of college bats, because, we kind of just spent 20 minutes talking about prep guys. College guys, again, teams are looking for, if you go to college, and especially if you're a senior, if you're close to being big league ready and you show well and you show that you have because college guys are more developed, right? So when they hit the minor leagues, those guys are more advanced than the 17 and 18 year old kids that are coming in. There probably is some player dev stuff that has to go on, but they're kind of put on a higher pedestal because there's not much more development left in college guys. I mean, there's not much more room to grow. If you're a skinny, lanky college kid, you're probably not going to add more weight, or you're probably finished maturing for the most part. And they just expect college bats to be more ready because they have 3 more years of experience under their belt. So I'm looking at a college guy from a bat standpoint that I don't care if he's right-handed or left-handed, but if I'm taking someone at number 8 overall, like the Padres are, or even in the first round, I want a guy who's close to being big league ready, who's polished, probably has average to above average hit tool or power tool, and can hold his own defensively. You're not going to see many right-handed hitting first basemen go in the first round of drafts because they're not lefties, and they're probably stuck playing first base for forever. And those guys that don't pan out at first base are just going to go right to DH or to the bench. So you kind of have to, it's kind of easier to look at college guys because they have more of a track record. But again, look for guys that have a solid hit tool, that, maybe have a good run tool, that play good defense, and they're just close to being big league ready. They're polished. There's not a ton of swing and miss in their game. They're patient. They'll take a walk here and there. Their strikeouts and walks are not too far apart. Those are the guys that go in the first round from college bats. You're not going to see a lottery ticket type prospect from the college ranks go in the first round unless he's a pitcher. Those guys do happen, but that's because they're pitchers and pitchers are different. But one thing I do want to touch on before we move on to prep arms is athletes. Okay, there's kind of a scouting rule, or I wouldn't say the golden rule of scouting, but definitely one of the top rules of scouting, is if there's two players that you're comparing, and they're both the same age, they're both at the same level, they have similar statistics, and you're trying to rank one guy over the other, I always look at which guy is a better athlete, because there's a saying that athletes tend to figure it out more. Your best athletes usually play shortstop at the lower levels. They're probably in center field if they're an outfielder. I've seen some really athletic second basemen and catchers too. So bank on the athleticism and the talent to pan out. This is why I've been harping on the Taylor Trammell hype train for a very long time now. Taylor Trammell is a guy who has all the tools in the world. And while the stat line last year didn't show that he was producing, I'm going to bank on a guy who's young, talented, has the pedigree, and as athletic as Taylor Trammell is, to figure it all out and put those tools together and have the finished product be an everyday outfielder at the big league level. So athleticism is something that you have to bank on, especially in the prep ranks. If there's a prep guy who's super athletic and maybe the tools are kind of raw, the hit tool's not there, the power tool's not there, there's some swing and miss to his game, he's not very good defensively, maybe he's an outfielder who doesn't take the best routes, always bank on the athleticism to potentially pan out. I'm not saying it's a guarantee, but I'm saying guys who are super uber athletic tend to figure it out more than guys that aren't. So just kind of keep these things in mind when you're looking at a guy. If you're watching a prospect in the Padres system or at a high school event or at a different team system, kind of go through these things in your head, right? How old is he? Is he a 25-year-old like Elliot Ashbeck was last year in Lake Elsinore? Is he 25 years old carving up a bunch of 19-year-old kids? That's not that impressive. Or is he an Adrian Morejon type, where he's 19 years old in Double A, he's having success, he's getting guys out, he's facing guys who are 2 to 3 years older than him, and he's still tearing it up? What's the body look like? Body type is so important when looking at any prospect. You have to look at the body and have some kind of feel for it. For example, an 18-year-old kid, high-waisted, so you know, has long legs, high-waisted, fairly lean kid, wide-shouldered, broad-shouldered kid. That guy is going to put on 20 pounds of good weight in the next 4 years. He's still growing. He's 18 years old. He's just a kid still. He has so much more maturing to do. A guy that I think of that comes to my mind is Joey Cantillo. Joey Cantillo is 6'4", about 215 pounds. He's high-waisted, super lean. He's a good athlete, and he's 19 years old. That guy is going to put on at least 10 to 15 more pounds, and with that is going to come more added velocity. And with more added velocity, his stuff's going to play up. And that's a guy that I'm very high on because I can project him out based on his build. Look at what the build does for a guy like that. He adds 4 miles per hour to his fastball. So let's say instead of being 88 to 92, he's 92 to 94 in 2 years. How does he get that velocity? Well, he's going to put on muscle, and that muscle is going to add mass, and that mass is going to add durability, and that durability is going to let him work, have a starter's workload and have his body hold up for the course of an 162-game season. So you have to project the body first. Is it a long kid? Does he have long arms? Is it lanky levers? Lanky levers means, is this a guy who, when he stands, his hands dangle below his kneecaps? Does he have super long legs? Is he really tall? Guys who are 6'6", and our pitchers in particular, don't really, they don't tend to repeat their deliveries consistently. And that kind of leads to more, that is a reliever-like tendency. So typically guys who are 6'6", 6'7", there are obviously some exceptions to the rule. But you look at a guy like Michel Baez, he's 6'8". I think he could potentially start, but you put that guy in the bullpen and he's going to be a weapon. And it's because he doesn't have to repeat his delivery over a truly long six-inning time span. He only has to do it for, 15 pitches. When you're looking at bats, does he have some muscle on him already? What do the shoulders look like? Is he 5'10"? Is he 6'2"? Is he 5'10 at 20? Probably done growing. 5'10 at 18? Probably has 2 inches left. So you have to put the age and the body type and pair that together. A 24-year-old who's lean and skinny is probably going to add some muscle on, but probably not as much because guys start maturing. They stop maturing around age 23 to 25. So a 24-year-old with a full beard is probably done growing, whereas an 18-year-old with a baby face, not as much, he doesn't have much facial hair. It's lean. It's athletic. That kid has so much more growing up to do that there's going to be a ton of byproducts coming from that. So you have to look at the body and the age. And the age also plays into the level, as I talked about earlier. So let's move on to pitchers now. And this is kind of my specialty because I am a pitcher right now in college. I would say that I'm better at evaluating pitchers than I am hitters. That's not to say that I'm not confident in myself evaluating hitters, because I am. But when I look at pitchers, I just see so much more than I do when I look at hitters. So let's look at prep arms. I'm fairly certain there's never been a prep arm that's been taken number one overall in the draft that's right-handed. They're usually always left-handed. So top guys, you're talking a top of the draft type of guy, it's probably going to be a left-handed arm. Now, there's certainly been a lot of prep arms that are righties that go at the top of the draft, but if there's a righty and there's a lefty, and the righty's like 92-94 with a good breaking ball and solid feel for a changeup, and there's a lefty and he's 88-90 with a nasty curveball and pretty good feel for a changeup, and they're both 18, unless there's something in the video that scouts like more, they're probably going to go with the lefty more, just because it's more unique. There's not as much lefties. It's an uncomfortable at-bat. Lefties tend to have better breaking balls than righties do. So just kind of something to think about whenever you're looking at a prospect and whatnot. Prep lefties, some things I look for, typically their velocity is down. So when it comes to that, I'm looking at the body. Is it if it's a 5'10 lefty with kind of already strong legs at 18, kind of broad shoulder type, he's probably not going to add more velocity. He's probably done growing, and there's not much projection. Now, if it's a skinny, lean, athletic 6'3" left-hander who maybe a wide-shouldered kid, high-waisted, long legs, you know, I just described Mackenzie Gore basically. That's a guy that I'm going to bank on adding good weight. He still has some more room to grow because he's 18. I love the build. It's athletic enough for where he can repeat his delivery consistently. I just there's going to be more durability and velocity to come because he's going to put good weight on. That's a kid I want to take high in the draft. And that's what happened with Mackenzie Gore, man. He was like 90, 91 coming out of high school, and now he's like 94, 95, can get up to 97. So just in a two-year span, you can see what that velocity jump has been because of the maturity that has come onto his build. When it comes to prep arms in general, I'm talking lefties and righties here, I want to see polish, okay? There's not any prep arm that can come and in their draft year go to the big leagues and get guys out. It's never going to happen. It's never happened before. But I want to see prep guys that can throw their fastball for strikes on both sides of the plate. Can they hit the outer half? Can they paint the inner half if they have to? I want to see feel for a changeup. A lefty that throws a changeup is a lot more impressive than a righty that throws a changeup. But regardless of how they throw, can they throw a changeup and can they throw it down in the zone for strikes? I think the ability, if you see a high school arm that can mix speeds and keep hitters off balance, that's very impressive, okay? And then the third thing I want to see in a prep guy is, can they spin a breaking ball? It doesn't have to be for strikes. It doesn't have to be a swing and miss pitch. I want to see their feel for being able to just spin the ball. Can they get good break on it? Is there sharp, tight break? Do they throw it from the same arm slot as their fastball? Is this a pitch that if it's a lefty throwing from a three-quarter arm slot, like Kyle Harrison? Kyle Harrison is a California kid. He's a UCLA commit, probably about 6'3". He's left-handed. He throws from a three-quarter arm slot, and that plays so well because his slider and fastball come out from the exact same arm slot, but his slider, obviously being a slider, moves more than his fastball. So it looks like a fastball coming out of his hand, and as soon as it's released, the hitter's like, oh, here comes a fastball, and then it tails out, or it cuts in if they're right-handed, or just tails away from them if they're left-handed, because it looks the exact same. No one's going to hit that. His slider is a swing and miss pitch. So can they throw a breaking ball that tunnels well and plays well off the fastball? Those are the things I want to see. Now, if I'm looking at a prep guy, do they have the ability to throw three pitches for strikes? Okay. I don't think you can be a starter at the big league. I don't think, let me rephrase that. I don't think you can be a consistent, quality, above average big league pitcher, big league starter, if you don't have a three pitch mix. Okay. So typically, I want to see, can they throw a fastball for strikes? Is there some feel for a changeup? With prep guys, you have to be weary because they might not have consistent secondary offerings, but if it flashes, if you're watching five innings of a kid and he throws 10 changeups and six of them are bad, but four of them have really good sinking action, they play down in the zone, there's guys out in front of it, it flashes above average to plus stuff, that's what I want to see. I don't expect an 18-year-old kid to be able to throw a plus changeup right away. That doesn't happen that much. It's very rare, and it's a special arm if they can do that. But if they can get swing and misses, and they can make at-bats uncomfortable on occasion with a changeup, and there's something to build on and something to work off, that's what I want to see. When it comes to a breaking ball, can he spin it? Does he have confidence in it? Does he like to throw it when he's behind in the count, when he's down 1-0, 2-0, 2-1? Can he flip a breaking ball? Can he flip a slider, a curveball in there and have confidence in himself to throw it for a strike? Is there some feel for it? Does he throw it from a similar arm spot, arm slot, or does he drop his arm tremendously, put stress on the elbow, and give away that a breaking ball is coming? There's so many things that I look for when I'm talking about prep guys and, you know, watching prep pitchers that you have to look at. Pitch sequencing is the biggest thing. It's one of the biggest things, in my opinion, is the pitch sequencing. Can a guy get guys out without relying on his fastball? Okay. Biggest thing with pitch sequencing is this. 95% of prep hitters are going to throw off-speed pitches that play off their fastball. The ones that can throw off-speed pitches for strikes without having to throw their fastball to get outs are special, special, special arms. A guy who will start an at-bat with a changeup. A guy when he's down 2-0 will throw back-to-back breaking balls. A guy who's down 3-1 and flips in a curveball to try and get you to swing over it. A guy who doesn't need to rely on a fastball to get outs is a special, special arm. And if they can do that at 18 years old, it's only going to get better, man. It's only going to get better. Big league pitchers don't need their fastball to get guys out unless they throw 100 miles per hour. And even every single guy that throws 100 plus in the big leagues right now has a nasty secondary pitch. Andrés Muñoz from the Padres throws 100 miles per hour. When he throws that slider, nobody has a chance to hit it, man. And it's because he can keep guys on balance. And it's not because he throws 100. If he threw his slider moves so much that he could probably get outs just with the slider. He doesn't choose to. He doesn't have to because he throws 100. But that's a big leaguer. And he's 20. If you get an 18-year-old kid that has the confidence in himself and his stuff to throw breaking balls and changeups and off-speed pitches early in the count or when he's behind for strikes and doesn't need to rely on his fastball to get swing and misses and outs, it's a special, special arm. Now, let's move on to mechanics. Okay, when you're looking at a prep guy mechanics, typically college guys are more polished because they just have more experience. And depending on what program they come from, they're probably a lot more polished than 95% of prep arms, probably 99% of prep arms in the country. But when I see a prep guy, I'm looking at so many different things. I'm looking at how is his delivery? Does he work with rhythm? Is this a guy who, when he starts from the windup, you know, kind of goes through his delivery? And is there a point in his delivery where he stops? Okay. Guys that stop, when you think about this, think about when you're driving a car. Right? Let's say you're going 80 miles per hour and you just slam on your brakes, right? You're stopping the momentum of your car going 80 miles per hour. It's the same thing of your delivery. When you start your delivery and you stop, you are stopping the momentum of your delivery, and now you have to exert more energy to get it back going, and that's going to tire you out and it's going to lose velocity because you're losing that momentum. So, is there a noticeable pause in his delivery? Does he incorporate his lower half? Is this a guy that throws, you know, that leads with his butt to the plate, which is what you want? Does he have explosion in his lower half? Or is he a straight up and down guy that just picks his foot up and goes without incorporating his big quad and glute muscles into his delivery? When he lands, is this a guy who lands with his front foot open, or is this a guy who lands in line or closed? Open is a bad thing. Open guys typically tend to over-rotate and don't throw a lot of strikes. They fly open, and it's just not good. Guys who work in line or who land slightly closed are the type of arms that typically throw more strikes. Does his upper body, do his shoulders stay closed? I want a guy who stays close as long as he possibly can, because that means he's going to work in line and be able to be more accurate with his throws. When his front foot lands, is his elbow above the shoulder and wrist above the elbow? What do I mean by that is I want you to picture when you're throwing a baseball, right? You kind of, everybody gets to that spot where they throw a baseball and where their arm is in the air. Well, typically, when your arm is in the air and you're getting ready to throw, the best throwing posture from an injury prevention standpoint is when the elbow is above the shoulder and the wrist is above the elbow. If you have a guy who kind of has an inverted W, which is when take your arms and literally turn them downwards to where your shoulders is above your elbow and your elbow is above your wrist. That's the number one Tommy John thing, okay? Because the amount of stress that it puts on your elbow to come back up and then go through the zone and accelerate your arm across your body, it's just way too much for how tiny of a muscle that is. So from an injury prevention standpoint, I want to see where his arm is when his front foot lands and he's about to start throwing. And when it comes to the finish, does he finish upright or does he finish all the way through across his opposite knee and it's an athletic finish? Guys who finish upright tend to leave stuff up in the zone, and stuff up in the zone nowadays gets hammered, okay? So guys who finish their pitches and work across their opposite knee and have athletic finishes and, you know, just get their stuff out in front and create extension, those guys tend to throw strikes more and tend to get better results. So there's so much mechanical things that you probably have to break down a video and stop it a couple times to actually truly get this going and get the hang of it. But if you can pick this stuff out and pick out tiny mechanical things, those are a lot of the times those tiny things are precursors to what that guy is going to be in 3 to 4 years down the road. Another big thing that I kind of missed, and I'm kind of upset at myself for missing this, but I'm going to kind of harp it in here, is effort. Okay. Now what I mean by that is every single big league pitcher throws with effort. Okay. There's not many guys that throw 100 miles per hour like Gerrit Cole does with not a ton of effort. Like that's a pretty easy 100. The ball just jumps out of his hand because he has great lower body mechanics and it's just a really talented arm. But guys, most arms that throw hard throw with a ton of effort. And even guys that throw 90 to 91, they're still exerting a ton of effort. They just don't have enough velocity in them as other guys. But typically, guys that throw with more effort, unless they're freaks like Max Scherzer, tend to be, you know, they tend to be relievers because their bodies get tired quicker because they're exerting more effort, so they're doing more work to throw a baseball and they get tired quicker, and then that leads to if a guy who throws with effort is in our starting rotation, over the course of a 30 to 32 start season, their body starts to wear down and they're maybe not always as healthy. We saw that with Scherzer this year. He's a guy that throws max effort every single pitch, and he got hurt twice this year. And I mean, it could have cost the Nationals their eventual World Series. So guys who throw with effort typically, you know, they typically are better suited as relief pitchers. Now, how do you know if a guy is throwing with effort or not? Well, one, you'll probably hear it. There's, you know, if you're close enough, guys who grunt are usually throwing. They're throwing so hard that their body is making an external noise that, you know, which is the grunt. But if you're just watching and you can't really hear anything, watch his head. Okay, guys who pull their head off and their head is all over the place are usually throwing with max effort. I'll give you two perfect examples. Matt Brash, who was the Padres' fourth round pick this year, has a really electric, loose arm, but he throws with a lot of effort. And another guy at the big league level is Andrés Muñoz. Watch Andrés Muñoz after every fastball he throws. He's literally almost at first base. He's on like fully on the first base side of the mound. His head's flying all over the place. So where their head goes and where they land is something that is a precursor that should show you that they're throwing with effort. A righty that lands like their whole body rotated towards the first base side, or a lefty who lands with their whole body towards the third base side, is usually throwing so hard that their body's just turning and they have to go that way. Guys who stay in line, you know, and keep their head in line aren't throwing with a ton of effort. Now that might mean that they're not throwing as hard, but they're probably going to be more accurate because they're staying close, they're staying in line, and they're actually looking to where they throw the ball. Now, another thing I want to talk about quick here is the arm. Okay, so how does the arm move? So in prep guys, and really at any level, if a guy has a loose, quick arm action to where you just see it. It looks natural. It looks pretty. When he's throwing the ball, he's not throwing with a ton of effort, and he's still throwing like 96, 97 miles per hour. And the arm is just, he's a lean, athletic kid. The arm is super loose. It just looks loose and smooth and whippy. Those guys are the dream. Okay, I'll give you two perfect examples. Luis Patino has the arm speed and electricity in that arm that people dream of. I mean, his arm is special because it's so loose. He generates a ton of power and velocity with his upper body as well as his lower body, which is why he throws relatively hard and relatively easy. Another guy in the prep ranks is Alejandro Rosario, a guy I tweeted about last night. He goes to Miami Christian High School. He's a Miami commit. He's like 6'1", 180, and regularly hits 96, 97 miles per hour on the radar gun because it is just a loose, quick arm. And you can just tell when you see it how beautiful his arm is. So, typically something you have to look at there. So, again, there's so many things to look at with pitchers, but it really comes down to pitchability. Feel for their off-speed pitches. Can they throw their off-speed pitches when they're behind in the count? And clean mechanics. Those four things are so important for prep guys because that allows me as an evaluator to project them out over the long term and over the next 3 to 4 years, what they're going to be like. Because when you're investing $6 million in a prep guy, you're not investing on what they are when they get drafted. You're investing on what they're going to be in 3 to 4 years. And you have to have some foundation to be able to accurately predict what they're going to be. So those four things to me in prep arms are super important. Now let's move on to college guys. And when you look at college guys, the biggest thing with arms is how ready are they to being in the big leagues? And how do you know if someone's ready? Well, first of all, durability. I want in a college kid, I want a strong guy with wide shoulders. There's some muscle on his body. He's probably 6'2", 6'3". Just a guy that I can look at and I can kind of think to myself, yeah, he could definitely endure a 30 to 32 start workload over the course of an 162 game season. So that's the big thing, because your best ability is being available to pitch. The second thing is I want to see polish. I want to see a guy who can throw his fastball for strikes at any on any of the four levels of the zone. Can he go inside? Can he spot outside? Can he throw up in the zone and get swing and misses? Does he work down in the zone when he needs to? So definitely with the fastball, it has to be solid command of that pitch. In terms of a changeup, I want to see some more advanced actions. Whereas the prep guy, it was, flashes here and there, so, something to give me hope and something to build on. College guy, I expect you to be able to throw strikes with your changeup. I expect you to be able to get outs and, have natural downward actions and it be a quality to, quality to above average pitch off your fastball. Breaking ball, I want to see break. Okay, I'm looking at the break when it comes to the breaking ball. For for an 18-year-old kid, I'm just looking for, can he spin it? Does he have feel to be able to spin that ball into the zone for strikes, whether it be up in the zone, maybe he spins it down in the ground, but is there some movement to it? For a college guy, I want to see break. What kind of shape is the pitch taking? Does it play off his arm slot? For example, guys who come over the top, they throw 12-6 breaking balls most of the time, okay, because it's just how their arm slot works. If I have a guy coming over the top who's throwing an 11-5 to 10-4 breaking ball, that means he's dropping his arm. Okay, and that's going to be something that the opposing hitters are going to pick up on, and because that's just how good professional hitters are. So I want the breaking ball to tunnel off the fastball, so similar arm slots. And then what's the break like? Is this a guy whose breaking ball breaks late, which is a good thing? Is this a guy who has tight break? Does it stay pretty much similar to his fastball, but still spinning at the same time? Does he throw a hard breaking ball or is it a slow breaking ball? Does he have two breaking balls? When he throws his curveball, is it nice and loopy and it's just asking to be punished and hit 440 feet? Or is this a guy who throws his curveball with conviction and gets it down in the zone? There's some spin to it. It's a high spin pitch, and he can get swing and misses on it. There's so many things that have to go in to college guys because you have to break them down more because there's not much maturity left in their game. There's obviously more development to come because college guys like Gerrit Cole, where Gerrit Cole was when he was taken number one overall and where he is now is a totally different guy. Like, eons different. But I have to see more out of a college guy than a prep guy if I'm going to invest $5 million in the college guy, because there's more upside to a prep player than a college player. In terms of his mechanics, I want them to be clean. I want him to use his lower half. I want him to stay closed. I want the arm to be clean. I don't want it to be stiff. I don't want it to drag. I want him to be in a good injury prevention standpoint when that front foot lands. I want him to work in line. I don't want a guy that spins off or lands open or lands fully closed and throws across his body and throws across all the momentum. So there's more evaluation when it comes to a college guy than a prep guy, because there's more to pick out because they're expected to be more polished. But I think what this really boils down to is that you have to know what you're looking for when you look at guys, right? Like, I can't just show up to a game and not know what bat path looks like, or what pitchability is, or what a good breaking ball and a bad breaking ball looks like for a respective level. So I need to know and be informed on what something is before I go out and evaluate someone, so I know I'm looking at the right thing, right? And I don't want anybody out there to think that they can't do this, because I'm relatively new to this stuff, and I'm telling you right now, if you really want to scout and you really want to, maybe not even scout, but you're just a casual fan that wants to know what they're getting in a prospect, you have to know, like, you have to be confident in yourself, and you have to learn, and you have to put the work in to develop these skills, because anybody can do it, man. This is not something that we're born with. Like, some people are born with the ability to throw 100 miles per hour and just a natural arm. This isn't, scouting isn't something that is like that. But you have to put the work in, and you have to know what you're looking for, and be well informed, and be confident in yourself to make bold claims on guys, even though some people, and maybe the industry-wide consensus might be totally different than what you think. That doesn't matter. You just have to be confident in yourself to be able to, you know, learn this stuff and then make the proper claims. So I hope this podcast helped. I felt like I pretty much just kind of wung this whole thing. So let me know what you guys think. If it's helpful, I'll keep making stuff like this. If it's not, then I'll just, we'll scrap it and we'll just stay talking about the same old Padre stuff. But I kind of wanted to give, you know, the podcast a new look and a new feel to it. So, again, subscribe to Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you never miss an episode if you do like this content. Follow us on Twitter at the FF Chronicle. Check out our stuff at FriarFaithfulChronicle.com, and have a good one.